me is amazing how she keeps up with it. Oh, you guys bootstrap me here. They know I walk so much, they bootstrap me so I can't move so far. Oh, that's all right. I guess I'm kind of talked out today. I've been lecturing all day, but can I just see a show of hands how many positions are here? Okay. Can I just see a hand, if you could hold up your hand, if you have a child that is already at the CDD MPS? Okay. Is there anybody that just held up their hand that has not seen improvements yet? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 people. And how long, what's the longest? Have you seen worsening? Okay. This is an important thing, and the reason I'm bringing this up is these children have gone through a tunnel of toxicity, if you will. We're trying to bring them back, and they are going to experience an exacerbation of what is happening. In other words, exacerbation of what they've experienced. This will become evident in a second when I go through this presentation, and I usually don't start off by asking how many parents are over here that have children that are on the CDD-MPS. It's very important for those of you who haven't seen the result yet to understand that I've never asked anybody to use this. And if anybody wants to stop it, I say stop it. It's your choice. This was only meant for the parents that no matter what happens, come hell or high water, they know that children were not supposed to be like this. My son was treated for 2.5 years, and every child that I reported in front of the U.S. Congress has been treated for over 2 years. So the choice is yours, and I've never encouraged anybody to use this. I just say, do what you feel is the right thing, look within your own heart, and your heart will tell you the truth. That's where God speaks to us, whether you call it sixth sense, you call it intuition, you call it the higher self, I don't care what you call it, that is God telling us, guiding us. So you listen to yourself. If you haven't seen improvements and you think it's not going to work, that is your choice. The key to success, what we have found, the one key to success, the thing that will dictate whether your child becomes 100% normal. I'm not talking about normal like other people describe normal. I'm talking about, I'm a nationally ranked chess player. My son put me in checkmate. Humor, understanding humor, and you'll see him just now, the youngest formal witness in front of the U.S. Congress. They paid for him to come up there. That's what I'm talking about, normal. If you want your child to be normal, the key is nothing to do with the treatment. It has nothing to do with the child. It has nothing to do with the doctor. It has everything to do with you and your persistence. Parents and their persistence, their endurance, is what will dictate whether they'll be successful or not. Having said that, I'm just going to go into this presentation. I'm going to make this real fast and then try to concentrate more on the question and answer session. This presentation is based upon presentation that I gave in Tennessee, Austin was the most recent one, but these are the number of presentations that I've been asked to give since May. Now, I wonder why that is. There's only one reason, because I don't need to say anything about this treatment, it speaks for itself. If you believe what I say, then you're foolish. You should not believe what I say, you should believe what the parents with the children are saying. Because you will have many people come up here and tout products and talk about different things, and they have everything to promise you. I promise you nothing, except that if your child was not supposed to be like this, this is an option that you may want to look at. That's all I'm going to promise you. Why was I asked to speak in front of the Subcommittee on Wellness and Human Rights? Because somehow, someone found out the results in some of the children that we've been treating. See, this has become pretty big since May 6, 2004. What's interesting is I was actually doing this since 2001. But we didn't tell anybody about it. We just kind of did it. And I mentioned it to some people whose work I respected. Some people like Boyd Haley, who had a great influence on making sure that I was heading in the right direction. Boyd always is such a humble guy. He said, no, I had nothing to do with this, but I attribute some of my success that if Boyd hadn't given me pieces of crucial information just at the right time, I may not have found this out. But truth is stranger than fiction, how God leads us in the right way, how we get directed, how things happen. There's only one reason that this happened with me, and I'll explain the story with my son in a second. But it happened not because, well, everyone in this room, the reason this happened to you, there's a certain reason. There's a gentleman that I just had the pleasure of meeting, Jamie Hanley. I know why this happened to him. I know why this happened to me, and I know why this happened to many of you. You may not know it yet, but the reason will become evident, and there's a reason that you're in this room. I don't care about the protocol. I don't care whether you use TDD-MPS. I don't care about any of that. I seriously don't care. I cannot tell you how little I care about that. There's only one reason I'm here, and that is because I made a promise to God that if I got my son back, I would not shut up. All right? And that's why I'm here. Okay, some background information. And I'm going to... Some of you may have already heard this presentation. I see some familiar faces, so I kind of feel hesitant. I almost feel like I'm giving the same thing. You know, it's like, how many times are you going to hear the same stuff? But for those that haven't heard this before, the World Health Organization, 1998 again, in 1999, came up with these statistics. 8 out of 10 people that die in the industrialized world die from either cancer or heart disease. Now, just think about that for a second. 8 out of 10 causes of death includes homicide, suicide, all natural disasters, all wars, all disease processes. 8 out of 10 people that die will die of either heart disease or cancer. So what does that have to do with autism? Let's look at heart disease for a second. American Journal of Cardiology, 22,000 times the safe level of mercury. I didn't say 100, 22,000 times the safe level of mercury in the myocardium, in the heart tissue, of patients that died of idiopathic dilated cardiomyopathy. And it's a situation or a condition that primarily affects younger adults. This is compared to the biopsy tissue samples of other people. Another obscure little journal called the New England Journal of Medicine, maybe some of you heard of it. Mercury directly related to the risk of myocardial infarction. So I did a little search for mercury in cardiovascular disease. I'm the vice chairman of the American Board of Clinical Mental Toxicology, and I'm also in charge of the training program for doctors. So every now and then I have to do some literary search, find out what's new out there. So I was doing a search under mercury and cardiovascular disease, and I found only maybe, I don't know, 40, 50, 60 articles in the medical literature. So it was a little disheartening because I was looking for more references, but there was a little obscure little link at the bottom right-hand corner, and so I clicked on it, and it was toxified. It took me to ATSDR, the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, which is a subdivision of the Centers for Disease Control, and I did the same search, and as you can see there, I don't have a pointer. Does anybody have a pointer here? If you look right there under mercury and cardiovascular, the second line down below, it says items 1 through 20 of 358. So 358 journal articles regarding mercury and cardiovascular disease, which if you think about it for a second, that's pretty alarming compared to only 30, 40, 50 articles in the medical literature. Why is there discrepancy? There's a difference between the medical literature and the scientific literature. Does anybody know that? The difference between the scientific literature and medical literature. I had no idea. I didn't realize that. So when doctors say, well, there's no medical literature to substantiate the effects of mercury, it's because they're looking at the wrong literature. So let's look at cancer. Again, I'm not going to go through all these things. This is just to point out that there are studies to show that there's mercury and cancer found less than 100 references in the medical literature, but you see that 643? Did everybody see that? For those, everybody from the back of the room, it's the third line down from where it's mercury, cancer, that's chemicals, and then items 1 through 20 of 643. Alright, you ready for the final blow? Neurodegenerative disease. 1,445 published scientific references on the interrelationship between mercury and neurodegenerative disease. We have a serious problem when the mother of a six-year-old is asked, a six-year-old autism is asked, what do you want for Christmas? And she says, I want enough money to get a billboard for a month to tell the world why my son is sick. Mercury is deadly. Flu shots, vaccines, it's in there. Why? Mom against Mercury. To me, this is the most disturbing sign because it shows me how desperate this mother was to let the world know. I mean, people put up billboards because they want you to come and buy a new Ford, right? Or they need you to subscribe to their cellular service. The profit motive there, right? Why is this mom doing this? Because she's desperate and she wants the world to know and she's tired of the fact that her child's getting better. But so how are we exposed to mercury? Well, on the bottom left-hand side, you see fish. We beat the hell out of the fish industry, right? Is that pointer?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh. He was not a test tube baby, you saw that? So, methylmercury. Everybody talks about methylmercury. The FDA is so concerned about methylmercury. We got to get it out of the fish. Be careful, be careful. Don't eat so much fish. It could be toxic. Oh, by the way, the poison right here, the mercury right here is okay, though. Don't eat the fish because it's got mercury, but don't worry about the mercury in your mouth that's leaking out every day at 9 nanograms per deciliter per tooth. That's okay. Oh, and also, you can put it in the vaccine. That's all right. It can be injected into your body, and it can leak into your mouth, but you should not eat it. It's all over. It's in a water supply. Centers for Disease Control, last year, NHANES data, 1 out of 8 women of childbearing age are mercury toxic. 1 out of 8 women of childbearing age are toxic, so what do you think their fetus, when it's born, at the conclusion of gestation, do you think these children are going to be clean? They're already poisoned before they even come out. Combustion of fossil fuel. Die-hard Republican. Have always been a die-hard Republican. I met President Bush 2 years ago. I was invited to the presidential dinner, help him with his campaign. At the second debate that was held at my alma mater, Washington University, President Bush made a fatal mistake in my eyes. He was asked about the air, and he said the air is cleaner today than when I took office. He's introduced a bill that's going to increase more mercury in the air by 62%. I still voted Republican, but I could not bring myself to vote for the president. Why do I say that? Well, I guess I could be facetious and say if God wanted us to have a president, he would have given us a candidate, but I won't. This is where we're getting mercury from. It is all over the place. They took a sheep and put radio-labeled mercury, labeled it with an isotope, radioactive isotope, and put it in 12 exclusion filling amalgam inside the sheep's mouth. And in 29 days, they took a scan, and this is what you see, the distribution of mercury in this animal. The critics of this study were very, very upset. They said, obviously, this is a ruminant. They chew all the time. To extrapolate this into humans is ridiculous. So they repeated the study, except this time they used monkeys. Same exact results. So let's talk about how I like to tell stories. So this is a story about how I got where I'm at. I personally have no interest in autism. I personally when the first time I took care of an autistic child, I didn't even know what autism was, really. I was trying to remember medical school. I was thinking, what deletion of the chromosome is that? And I'm trying to remember. I was thinking it was one of the chromosomal anomalies. But I got there because of chain of events, a sequence of events that led me there. So in 1997, one of my first patients when I was in private practice who got better asked me to help her with her daughter. Her daughter was a 3-year-old child who had been diagnosed with autism. Well, I told her I'm not a pediatrician and I'm not a neurologist and I really don't know how I'm going to help you. I would recommend you find a neurologist or a pediatrician. And she says, well, Dr. Tarr, I'd like for you to see if you can help her like you helped me with my gut and all these different things. And reluctantly, I went ahead and took her child on as a patient, and lo and behold, in the mother's eyes, the child gets better. The child starts having better eye contact. The child starts looking at the father and directing the father's gaze by grabbing his face and redirecting it to herself. She starts playing patty cake again, which she stopped doing in a year and a half. And she's ecstatic. And the pediatric neurologist who spawned the child, she's ecstatic. I can't see any difference. To me, the child's still autistic. Some improvements, but the child's still autistic. And that's how I got involved with autism reluctantly. By early 1998, I did not want to see any more autistic children. I was emotionally, it was depleting. It was difficult to see the pain in the parents' eyes. I'm a very black and white type of a guy. It's either black or it's white. There's no gray zone. My training's in general surgery, so we're very simple people. When in doubt, cut it out, eat wood, steel. Those were my mottos. So I wasn't getting enough results, and I decided that this was not something that I really wanted to do. It was very emotionally depleting for myself and my staff. It was almost like every time a child came, they took a part of us away. And in the early 1998, I saw my last autistic patient and sent letters out saying that I was not going to see any more autistic children. I'll stop the story there and go into this other story. It's kind of like a Tom Clancy novel. There's a whole bunch of things going on at one time. At about this time, or just shortly after this issue with missed heavy metals became obvious to me, and I'm going to show you a couple of cases here. This is a typical person, Robin T., 44-year-old female, who came to me in October of 2000. Actually, she's been a patient of mine since 1998. Good health, the biggest concern was osteopenia, no problems, and then one day she comes in and she says, after being a patient of mine for 3 years, well-informed, knows about metal toxicity, after being a patient for 3 years, she comes in and she says, Dr. Pitar, I feel like I'm dying. Of course, I said, don't be so silly. You're not dying. Tell me what's wrong. And she says, no, I really feel like I'm dying. I'm losing my hair. I've lost 15 pounds. I can't think straight. I have no sex drive. My skin's starting to become flaky. I can't think. I'm confused. I feel like I'm dying. I asked this lady, I said, let's go ahead and check your metal levels. Again, I don't know why I said that, but I mean, this had been a patient of mine for 3 years, so I had suggested to her to do metal testing before, and she said she really didn't think it was an issue. She was in great health, so I never pursued it. When I said that about, let's test her metal, she said immediately she wanted to do the testing, and this is what we found. 65 micrograms per creatinine, anything less than 3 is considered normal, greater than 3 is considered toxic. So you look at the date here. We start treating her. In a very short period of time, we drop her down to 29. Again, this is DMPS. You see, the first one is also DMPS. This is IV. So we get her down to 29 micrograms per gram creatinine. Same person, Robin T. Still. Now we got her down to 21 micrograms per gram creatinine. You see the rate of decrease. We got more out the first month and a half than we did the last 3 months. Right? Now we add glutathione to DMPS. Glutathione is an antioxidant. It's very high in sulfhydryl groups. It helps to donate sulfhydryl groups to the chelating process so that there's more mercury that can bind to the sulfhydryl groups. And look at what we did. We doubled the yield of mercury. You will not get this if you just do glutathione by itself. So please don't misunderstand. The glutathione in conjunction with an effective chelator will pull out more metals. We continued to treat her. She was down to 21 here with DMPS and glutathione. It continued to get better. In retrospect, what happened with her? Her daughter had broken a thermometer. She vacuumed it up. The patient vacuumed it up, formed an aerosol. She inhaled it, and she had acute mercury toxicity. So that's how you see a person comes in, they've got metal toxicity, you test them, pretty standard, right, Dr. Wilkinson? Pretty standard case, cut and dry, they're toxic, you treat them, they get better, end of day, right? But the problem is, patients with impaired detoxification pathways, I didn't even know what that was. This following patient is a patient that I owe a lot to. Personally and professionally, she doesn't know that, but I owe a lot to her because she taught me a tremendous amount. All my patients teach me, but she especially was a very prominent teacher in my life. 34 years old, Karen D. comes to me in 2000. Her history was significant because she had. We bored somebody, so they
No, they got 11 last night, so now they want. And if any moms have heard him or dads have heard him a lot and want to do a testimonial that intervention, come on outside.
Is this any? Are you talking about the boss you talk to?
Yeah.
So there's a child that anybody that's a parent wants to talk about their experience with TDDMPS. Mm-hmm. Hate that testimonials.
Sorry.
A parent self-assessment. All right. So this lady comes to me. What was significant about her was that at 34 years of age, she had every system in her body that was being affected. She had milk coming out of her breast, black urea. She had an ataxic gait. She couldn't walk straight. She had an articulation problem. She was losing her hair in her head. She had new hair forming on her face called hirsutism. She had arthralgias, joint pain. She had myalgias, muscle aches. She had arrhythmia, her heartbeat was erratic all the time, she had constant chest pain. She had everything that you could imagine wrong with her. Her thyroid was all whacked out, she felt cold all the time, her body temperature was like 95 degrees. She had had every type of diagnosis. She'd been put on predominantly antidepressants, but she'd also been treated with some antipsychotics. And when she came to me, she had seen 16 doctors in 5 years, and she said that if I couldn't help her, she was referred to me by a friend first, she said that if I couldn't help her, very calm, that she would help herself. And she patted her purse. I don't know if she had a gun in there. I don't know if she had pills in there, but she said that she would take care of, because she couldn't live in that much pain anymore. I actually had to have her sign a contract with me that she would not hurt herself, because I didn't know that hospitalized this woman when she first came in. She's 34 years old, and I tell her, Karen, don't worry about this. There's only one thing I know that can cause this. Don't worry. We're going to take care of it. This is mercury. I know it. We'll take care of it. And she said, Dr. Tarr, I've already been checked for mercury. And I said, no. Those blood tests don't work. Those doctors don't know what they're doing. You got to have an IV treatment done. You got to collect your urine, and that's the only way they'll show it to us. And very calmly, she says, I had an IV treatment. And I had my urine collected, and I didn't have any mercury. So I said, who's the doctor that tested you? She gives me the name. He's out of the Outer Banks in North Carolina, about 6 hours away. I called him. I didn't know what the doctor, I didn't know who he was, but he knew who I was, and he told me that at ACAM conference, the conference we're here for, a couple years ago, but this was back in, I think, 1999, there was a hot panel discussion of Becky Burks or something like that. I can't remember what it was, and I was one of the five people on the panel. And he had followed my exact protocol of using DMPS. And he faxed me the results, and the mercury level of that patient on Karen was 2.3. It says 2.8 here, but that test showed 2.3. And he sent me the protocol sheet, and sure enough, he had my name on it. He'd done it exactly like I do it. So I tell Karen, okay, well, look, it was done a while ago. Let's repeat it. Maybe there was a lab error. You know, whatever. Let's just redo it. She agreed. We redid it, and this is her test result. Mercury 2.8, notice all her other metals are barely there at all. Notice arsenic 13, very, very low. So now I'm in my office, she's sitting there, we're going over the test results, and she can kind of tell that my level of enthusiasm is a lot more. I'm not saying I'm going to take care of it, blah, blah, blah. And she says, Dr. Clark, can you still help me? And I said, Karen, we'll get your gut straight and we'll deal with the inflammation issues and allergies and we'll do this and we'll do that. She says, no, no, you said that I was going to be okay. You said not to worry and I was going to be okay. You could take care of this. Can you still do that? And I was scared because I didn't want this woman to kill herself. That was my biggest concern at the time. And then, of course, again, I'm a simple type of guy, so I like success. I don't like failure, and it doesn't make any difference where it is in my life. I just don't like to say that I can't do anything, but at the same time, I knew that I couldn't help this woman like I thought I could. And I told her, Karen, I don't know. I'll do the best I can, but I would have sworn, I would have bet $1 million that this was mercury. And I'm writing the chart, and then she said the words, for those of you that have been here before, know what I'm going to say, she said the words that literally changed my life. I mean, not figuratively, but literally changed my life. She said, what would you do if I was your sister? Now, like I've always said, I like to think that I would treat all patients like I would a family member, but I told her, in all honesty, that if she was my sister, I would not rely on this test results, and I would start treating her for mercury. I'm not even sure why I said that, but that's the truth, that she was my sister, and that's what I would have done. Medical legally, I can't really treat this person for mercury because she doesn't have mercury, right? Medical board, lawyer, anybody else, they get this doctor treating somebody that doesn't even have a problem here, and she doesn't have a problem from this test. Immediately, I mean, I hadn't even said the word that I would start treating you, for mercury. I hadn't even finished that phrase out of my mouth, and she said, I want to start treating today. We did the physical that same day. We started her treatments that day. Now, look at the date. Anybody see the date? 16th, March 2000. This was her challenge test. This was her first test in my office. She's now 35, it's 6 months later, October 2nd, this is doing weekly IV, 1 week EDTA, 1 week DMPS, 1 week EDTA, 1 week DMPS. Her mercury level is 9.4, her arsenic level is 260, same person, you see that? She's 35, it's 6 months later. Oh, by the way, no more milk coming out of her breast, and her, arrhythmia, her heart issue, 80 to 85% improved. All her other problems still there. Arsenic goes up to 260. 2.8 micrograms per gram creatinine, mercury goes up to 9.4. Anybody, can you tell me what's going on? It's coming up. Why? Why is it coming up? That doesn't make any sense. Why is it getting higher? These tests tell us what's going on with the person, right? Thank you. Who said that? There you go. These tests measure what we are pulling out. They are not indicative of what's in the system. Highly, highly, highly accurate from a qualitative standpoint, but from a quantitative standpoint, they don't mean anything. This is a crucial misunderstanding that I had in my career, and I think that every doctor does, because we rely on these tests like the gospel. We see that, oh, this is what your level is. No, it's not what the level is. It's only indicative of what we're pulling out. The only method of accurately figuring out what's in the body is by multiple site biopsy, which is not conducive to life. So, to October 2000. I'm going to flip now 6 months forward. 6 months forward, same patient, 35. Look at that mercury, 19. And she's getting better. She's no longer suicidal. Her arthralgias are improving, her myalgias are improving, her hirsutism is improving. Her skin looks way better. She can't sing enough of our praises. Now she's 36. Every week she comes in for an IV treatment for 2 years. 1 week EDTA, 1 week DMPS. every week for 2 years. You can see it right here. 27 micrograms per gallon of acid. Almost symptom-free. She still has a slight ataxic gait. She still occasionally has an articulation problem. Depression, suicide, can't even remember that. All her other issues are totally resolved. Now in 2001, we finally get a mercury level that's down to 1.7. So what does that mean? Almost gone, right? Because we've gotten higher until there's no more left. It's all gone, right? Who says she got used to it? Nobody gets used to mercury, but that's, I know what you mean. She got, or she was resistant to the treatment, is what you mean, right? No, it's not, that's actually not the case, though. 1.7, look at the challenge down here. Remember DNPS. What happens when you add glutathione to it? You increase the yield, right? Because you're donating more sulfhydryl groups. So we did that. We added glutathione, and there's the level, 8.7. So she still got mercury in her system. Mercury is the second most toxic substance known to man. That's why it's included in our vaccine. Apolipoprotein genotyping. This is the work of a very good friend, Michael Godfrey. I say he's a very good friend. I've never met him, but we've talked on the phone many, many times. And he's actually going to be a co-author with me on the study when we finally get to it. The write-up of our cases, Dr. Paris Kidd will be helping us with, who's in the audience here. And he's been very, very diligent at following up with me, making sure it's prodding me to make sure that I get him all the information, which I have not done. But this study was fascinating because it showed the ApoE allele, which is associated with cardiovascular disease, showing what ApoE, the association with the ApoE3 allele and 4 allele, a 3-3, 3-4, especially a 4-4, had a tendency to be associated with the inability to detoxify mercury. Potential biomarker for mercury toxicity. He went back four generations and found 100% correlation with the ApoE allele 3-3 or 3-4 mutation in families with neurological type of problems. Dementia, Asperger's, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, you name it. This is one of the genotyping issues that we need to look at. We actually did this in 31 of the children, actually 28 of the children, and we threw in two ADD, ADHD kids. Sent them all off to New Zealand, did them at his lab, and everybody was a 3-3 or a 3-4. We had one 4-4, and we had two patients that were 2-3s. You get one allele from your mom and one from your dad. The two patients that were 2-3s, guess what? Both ADD patients. Now, there may be some of the kids that may be more toxic. There's other issues here. You know, ApoE just one. You've got the methyl tetrahydrobiopterin reductase deficiency. You've got so many other types of deficiencies that could dictate an impaired detoxification aspect to the body. So we probably haven't even elucidated 90% of them. But so far, ApoE and MTHFR, those are some of the ones that have been shown to have. It's a genetic predisposition for the inability to detoxify. And that's what we're dealing with here. That's what your children are dealing with here. Why is it that, I'm sure that you've heard this from your family, friends, relatives, pediatrician, well, if it really was mercury, then why did it affect your other children? It's because of that impaired ability to detoxify. What Karen had, that's what Karen taught me, that she couldn't get rid of it. Like the first patient, Robin could easily get rid of it. You start seeing the difference? That's what the key here is. We all have mercury. It's the one that can't get rid of it. That's chocolate. This is the reason that I got involved. Remember I said I don't care if you use this or not? I really don't care. Go use whatever you want to use. Go use whatever there's people marketing. Whatever you want to do, go use it. There's only one thing that I wanted, and I got him back. That's why I did it. Remember that Tom Clancy thing I said before? I stopped seeing autistic children in early 1998. In January of 1999, God gave me Avi, 10 months after I stopped seeing the last autistic child. His mom and I had decided that he would have to get no vaccines. Unbeknownst to me, she went back. She got the vaccine the next day. She didn't do it because she's a bad person. Well, okay. She did it because she was trying to do the best thing that she knew. Although she'd worked in the clinic and she knew about metal toxicity, she believed in it. We had 9 doctors that came in into the delivery room after he was born, in the postpartum room. 9 different ones, 4 of whom I would consider friends or associates, and tried to convince us that it was so important to do the vaccine. And I said, absolutely not. My daughter had had them, she was fine, but I didn't want to have my son have them. I didn't know as much when my daughter was born. And they didn't convince me, but I guess they must have gotten to my ex-wife, because she went back the next day. So let's look at his results. His mercury doesn't exist. Arsenic and antimony. For the doctors in this room, when you're treating these children, you will see an increase in arsenic, antimony, nickel, and tin first. You will see those levels increase in hair, and as they start coming down, you'll start seeing an increase in mercury. Why those metals, I don't know, but that's what I find. I tested him, and I tested him, and I tested him. Here's just an example of a DMSA challenge, the last DMSA challenge. Somebody asked me already, why is it the Dr. Cave says that DMPS is dangerous? I have no idea why Dr. Cave says that. DMPS has been approved in Europe for over 50 years. It is a very safe substance if used correctly. That's his mercury yield with the DMSA on 12-12-2001, right before his third birthday. Here's an example of his hair, this classic C pattern. He has C patterns that connect the dots, very high in antimony. Bismuth is another one that you sometimes see high in these children. He also had high titanium, I don't know why, but classically, antimony, arsenic, nickel, and tin are the ones you see about. Boyd Haley. I was asked to come to this cruise, medical cruise, and give a lecture in February 2002. There's no way I could take a week off to do that. But then I found out that Boyd Haley was going to be on this cruise giving a lecture, so I went and I got engaged on that cruise. In fact, I got engaged in front of that man right there. Boyd was kind of looking at me real strangely, kind of walking away from me, because the more he walked away, the more I was following him around like a puppy dog trying to get, you know, for those of you who know Boyd Haley, he's kind of a short guy, and he kind of kept on looking at me like he's kind of shifting away from me. But I hounded him, and he gave me some information that I found to be very crucial. This study was published, I think, in 2003, but I was privy to the information pretty early on. And what Boyd showed with Amy Holmes and some other people, with Mark Blackstill, is that the children that had autism, when compared to the children that were neurotypic, normally developing, the children that were normally developing actually had an exponentially greater concentration of mercury than the children that were autistic. I can't remember the exact figures, but I believe it was like 4 and a half times higher level of mercury in the normal children compared to the children that had autism. Did I say that right? You sure? But mercury is what's causing this, and why is it so low in the children that have autism? Bingo! I had a doctor that tried to argue this point with me at a conference. And he said, clearly this study shows that mercury has nothing to do with it, because if it did, then you would see it in the autistic children, but you don't. You only see it in the normal children. So I said, so what are you trying to tell me? We should start giving all the autistic children, all the normal children, mercury? I mean, the autistic children don't have enough mercury to bring their levels up too, so that we can make them neurotypic? I mean, is that what you're saying to me? totally missed the boat. I mean, he just completely missed the whole point of the study. This is my son's DNPS challenge. The date they received it was January 25th. That's actually incorrect. The date completely, because I got a value called back to me on January 25th. It so happened that that's my son's birthday. And I had asked him as a favor. We FedExed it out that morning, and I asked him as a favor if they could run it to staff. And I don't remember exactly all the details, but you can see my mercury level is 13 micrograms per gram creatinine. And I called his mom, and I told her that he was mercury toxic. And she said that if I touched him, she would make sure that I would lose my medical license. So I started treating him that night. Well, I mean, I didn't do it because I was bold. I just didn't know how long I had for my license for, so I started. That's him today, or not today, a couple of months ago. He is a very, very special child. Obviously, all children are special, and we as parents love all our children. But there's something different between he and me. We just need to be closer together. There's a very, very special bond there. I can't quantify it. But I say that he's the youngest healer. He's the youngest doctor in the world because of him. There are a couple of hundred children that have either totally gotten better or well on their way of getting better. And in all continents that are getting better because of what he taught me. And he's a special little man. I think that there's a couple people that have had the privilege of meeting him. And sometimes when I look at him, I told him the other night, he came walking down about 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was working on my computer, and he comes down. He just came right up to me and just put his arm around me, and I hugged him, and I said, "Avi, sometimes I love you so much. Sometimes it hurts because I love you so much."
Yeah, I know.
And he says to me, "Daddy, I feel the same way." You know, sometimes I think, and when I'm out here in front of an audience like this, I really feel sorry for everybody here because you have no idea what it feels like to be the father of this little boy. Just as I don't know how it feels to be the father or the mother of your child. But I know that many of you know exactly what I'm talking about. These children have been poisoned. There is no other way to put it. They have been poisoned. That's it. I'm just going to flip through these real quick. 31 patients diagnosed with autism-like spectrum, grade developmental delay, all third-party independent diagnoses. I did not make any of these diagnoses. This is transferable DNPS. Let me explain this just so that there's no confusion. This is not taking DNPS and glutathione and throwing them in the same bucket and mixing them up into a big ladle as Tom Bader would like to make everybody believe. Don't be facetious here. Tom's always said that I need to be more clarified. The joke is that we make this in my bathtub. special bathtub right now. It's actually glutamic acid, cysteine, glycine, and methionine, 4 amino acids that are covalently bonded to the DNPS. The technology that allows us to do this is the same technology that was developed for the use to create transcitropin, which nobody has been able to duplicate. It is an in vivo mimicking of an in vivo process of protein conjugation. We are able to stabilize the DNPS, which is highly oxidative, and we are, by conjugating with the amino acid, it makes it more assimilable within the system so the body can absorb it better. Not only absorb it better, but it can actually be assimilated better within the system. And that's why it works. And if you know, people said, "Well, you know, there's another DNPS out there, and I can use that, transform it." I said, "Great, go use it." But that's the stuff that causes the oxidative reactions. I don't care what anybody uses, but I do have a problem when a pharmacy tries to make a product, they use my name, and they use my data. Again, I don't care if it's successful. If it's helping the child, that's great. But when it starts creating an oxidative reaction that looks like a third-degree burn on the child, and they're using my name to do it, I have a serious problem with it. So I will tell you, if you want to duplicate what we did, it was using the the TDDMPs, which is only available through AMP pharmacies. That is the only pharmacy. They actually came down, College Pharmacy, Tom Bader, very smart gentleman, came down to North Carolina and opened up a pharmacy right next to my lab so that they can make the DMPs exactly the way we want. Because all of the pharmacies that try to do it can't do it. Well, we know they can't do it because they don't have the technology to mimic the in vivo process of protein conjugation. We know that. That's the reason. So I put this, this is an old slide, and the reason I explain it just simply as good as on a DMPS is because if I tell you the sky is blue and you look out there and you see the sky is blue, you're happy, right? But if I try to tell you that, well, actually the sky is not blue, but it's a various wavelengths of light that interact and then cause a displacement of what you're actually seeing through your optical orbs, and you perceive it as blue, and I go into all the esoteric aspects of physics to explain again. As you can tell, they do a very good job with that, but you understand what I'm saying. You would look at me like, what are you trying to say? The sky is blue. So we explained it very simply. We didn't go into the aspect of the covalent bonds with amino acids to stabilize, blah, blah, blah. But that's what it is. It's not just simply DMPS with glutathione. All right, plus there's the ones of you that are that may have a scientific background, you know that methionine is not part of glutathione. All right, all 31 patients tested. Urine metal toxicity and essentials, hair metal toxicity and essentials, red blood cell metal toxicity, and fecal metal toxicity. Done at baseline, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 months, and then after that every 4 months. By the way, this is in addition to standard blood work, a complete diagnostic stool analysis, the organic acid test, a couple other tests. We do this on a very, very regimented schedule. All 31 patients showed little or no level of mercury on initial baseline test results. Here's an example of a child with Fowler. You'll notice the mercury level is 0.048. All 31 patients showed significantly higher levels of mercury as treatment continued compared to baseline. Evidence of clinical improvements, no speech, speaking full sentences, improved behavior, no stimming. You can correct that. Return of full eye contact, becoming potty trained, physical rate of growth increases, beginning following instructions, appropriate response. I've had two children that have grown 6 inches in 6 months. We've had a number of children that have grown 2, 3, 4 inches in 6 months. One of the first things that parents notice are the older kids, 6, 7, 8-year-old kids, that become potty trained in less than 3 months. At the last conference I was at last week in Austin, I asked for a show of hands how many parents had children over the age of 7, and a couple of them raised their hand, and I said, were any of them not potty trained before starting TDDF? All of them raised their hand, and every one of them in less than 3 months was potty trained. Again, when you talk about worsening, that is part of the healing crisis. That is the mercury being mobilized and they're re-pulling them through the tunnel. So remember that. That's an important thing that I think people need to be aware of. That was an article that was done on our practice. But improvements correlated with the increase in mercury measured, i.e. as more mercury was eliminated, the more noticeable the clinical improvements. And here's the same child, Skylar, 2 months later, up to 0.174, a 350% increase in mercury yield. Again, this is why the children are getting better, because it's a slow but steady pull of mercury, and I'm going to explain this aspect in a second. The constant and continuous pull of mercury is what the key is. That's why it's so successful. Issues of compliance, it's a lot easier to put a cream on a child. In fact, most of these kids take it themselves, as opposed to putting an IV in their arm. And the frequent dosing schedule, every 48 hours. People have asked me, why is it every 48 hours? Anybody know why it's 48 hours? I hear a lot of mumbling. Sorry. You just tell me if you need to change anything for yourself. What was the answer? Put the minerals back. Well, that's exactly why. But can anybody tell me why we how did we come up with 48 hours?
Because you're having fun every other day.
That's right, yeah. That's exactly right. That's the answer. So when actually my ex-wife decided that she would help, we went to every day. Didn't work. Because of the minerals. All the kids during that 5-month, 6-month period, it wasn't working for them. My son's improvement stopped. And I realized that, again, God has a way of making things happen. What we think are our obstacles are really our prayers being answered. Renal function and mineral depletion. Now, some of these slides are actually going to go into more medical stuff. Because sometimes I'm giving this presentation in front of doctors, so I'll just get to those. This is a structure of DMP is not recaptured from panels upon, pitfalls, and these are just, again, the IV issues. Oral dosing is usually recommended. Okay, why does an oral dosing work? Well, you can use it, but the reason I stopped using it was because, one, DMPS is only 45 to 55% absorbed through the gastrointestinal system. On top of that, you've got an issue with gut vacillation. These children, as a society, we have a problem with gut issues, but then on top of that, these children have opportunistic problems, yeast issues, altered GI physiology, dysbiosis, leaky gut, blah, 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 blah. They have problems with the gastrointestinal system. So we have impaired gut function on top of an already vacillating gut function because of our society, and you've got only a 45 to 55% absorption that makes it really pretty poorly absorbed. And the biggest reason is because the children couldn't tolerate it. They were always cramping, they were in pain, they were bloated, they were walking over, doubled over. So that's why we don't use it orally. I like an IV, but it's hard to put an IV in a child and dose it every other day. Okay, this is a doctor question, so we'll go over that. I, a couple of conferences ago, I was lecturing from a doctor, so that's my IV protocol. So results in the non-patient we don't need to talk about that. Here's an example of a patient, an adult patient, we use a transdermal DMPS, 31 mercury, transdermal DMPS, dropped it down to 23, DMPS glucagon. This is actually a challenge with an IV. We treated with transdermal DMPS, and then we did a glucagon and DMPS challenge shortly thereafter. And as you can see, the result, all she was treated with was just transdermal DMPS, but the challenge test was done with an IV, so we collected to see. So there's no way that somebody can go from 31 down to 20, whatever, down to 8.7 with just three IVs. As you saw, it's everyday type IV, but instead of doing the IVs every week, we did the transdermal. Pitfalls, again, let me just skip over this. Okay, DMSA. Everybody asked me about DMSA. A couple years back, I was invited to a conference to talk about this issue, and I was only one of two doctors. Dr. Stephanie K was one of them, I was the other one. It just so happened that the conference was in front of lawyers. It was a legal conference. This is when they were playing all the class action lawsuits. So when Dr. K finished speaking, somebody asked her, one of the people in the audience who was an attorney who happened to be my patient, asked her, why do you use DMSA instead of DMPS? And her answer was, because it's approved. And it was my turn to speak, and I'm not a very politically correct guy, so I was asked the same question. I said, because I choose to use something that works. I guess that never sat well with her. Didn't mean to offend her, but I stand by what I said. I asked Boyd Haley in... Boyd's a great guy. Boyd's one of my... Boyd pulled me aside once, I guess probably about 2 months ago, and was telling me how proud he was of me, and that most doctors would stand up and, you know, yell like I do, but Boyd's my hero, and because of Boyd, I really... A lot of what I've done has been a direct result of him, and as you know, he doesn't also hide behind words. He says that he has no problem calling doctors idiots, you know, and he says that... I get away with it a little bit better since I'm a doctor myself, but the point is that I was with Boyd, and I said to him as we were walking, he teaches, he's sometimes a lecturer at my workshop that I put on for doctors, and I asked him, I said, Boyd, everybody talks about DMSA, and I just don't see it working, so people ask me, why don't I use DMSA, and my answer used to be, you know, I wish to God DMSA worked. Because if DMSA worked, then we would have put it in a transdermal base and we would have been using it. We did try that, but it didn't work. So I said, I don't know why everybody talks about DMSA, because it just doesn't work. And Boyd looks over his right shoulder and over his left shoulder, and he goes, I'll tell you why it doesn't work. Because it's a damn neurotoxin. Exact words. He said, I can quote him. You want me to stop?
Yeah, there's a big change. Everybody's changed things.
That's a good place to stop, right?
Yeah.